everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. My buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Tom, how are you here midweek? Everything going well for you? I mean, have you recovered from that big birthday celebration we had?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Looking forward to some wintry, at least as Arizona calls it, weather.
Well, wintry weather for maybe 12 hours or so.
Yeah, we're supposed to have some rain maybe Thursday night and Friday.
Yep, and we'll be, of course, discussing that with Zach Guido here in a moment. But it is Buckmaster Midweek Edition. It's Wednesday, December the 8th, 2021. Do you believe it? Christmas now just a couple of weeks away. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, our radio station 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. The call letters KVOI, pretty easy to remember, like The Voice, K-Voice. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. And we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com, our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. One of our contributors, and I'm so proud of these people, there's such, they excel in each of their particular fields. We've got about two dozen regular contributors to the show. One of them is with me in studio right now, Dr. Zach Guido. He's our contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at Arizona Institutes for Resilience, acronym AIR, very appropriate. AIR coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thanks for having me.
You know, whoever came up with this AIR, I think they're onto something, because, you know, climate, and especially with the way things are changing, it does affect a lot of different disciplines, doesn't it?
Yeah, it transects all
law,
of society.
You know, like, you know? I was saying, public policy, certainly
natural
water,
resource management.
Water resources, look what's going on the Colorado River. We had our quarterly Arizona Water Report yesterday here on the show with Karen Caesar of the CAP. And we're looking at a tier one shortage.
That's right.
And quite honestly, some of the forecasts for Lake Mead aren't real promising, Zach.
No, I mean, this has been in the making. I guess I would say the water issue is not snuck up on us.
Some would say 20 years.
That's right. We've been in declining reservoir levels for the most part. A few, you know, increases here and there. But again, we talked about this. I can't remember the last time I came on, Bill.
I think you were on a couple of months ago.
Yeah, but
I remember it was still very green, the desert.
That's right. We right after a historic monsoon.
Yep.
And yeah, the water issue always turns its eyes on the upper Colorado River Basin, particularly for the Colorado River, because in the wintertime, because that's where most of the water comes from. So, you know, winter is a really critical time to replenish, provide the stream flows that in some years increase the storage. In most years, the trend has been we've been giving out and it's been evaporating more than we've been putting back in. And so we're there. That shortage that you mentioned before, I mean, there's a lot of people that can speak very knowledgeably about this topic.
And they did yesterday on the show.
On the show.
Nothing to take away from you. But you know, if we do get, and like you say, we are dependent on the kind of the upper Colorado River Basin. Well, if you look at what's going on in Denver and in Colorado this fall, it's not good news. In fact, from what I understand, unless things have changed in the last day or two, Denver is looking at one of the longest consecutive dry spells in history up there. Very late. I don't even think they've had a snowfall yet up there.
Yeah, we're across the west, across the southern part of the west. Parts of the west have been actually quite quite wet, and we can talk about that in a minute. But certainly, you know, us here in Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, it's gotten off to a relatively dry winter. I want to stress, though, that it's only early December.
And technically, it is not winter yet. I mean, it's still late fall.
Yeah, it's cold enough in the mountains. So when you get rain, you get snow. Mm-hmm. And we haven't had enough of those events. I was actually kind of surprised. I was prepping for this interview today, and I was looking at Tucson and just wondering how often it has. We've gotten basically zero precipitation in October and in November, and I was curious how often that happens.
How often does it happen?
Well, we're historically dry right now.
I had a gut feeling.
Yeah, in fact, it's 75 years in the record that I looked up at the airport, we're tied for the driest sum of October and November. So,
and what was my gut feeling? Well, we had that very, very green, nice moisture in our monsoon season, summer rainy season, which technically ends September 1. Then guess what? October, November, drying out as much as you can, I guess. And look at the temperatures. Almost every day, our high temperatures have been 10, sometimes 15 degrees above normal.
Yeah, so I think, you know, since the monsoon, the two stories, at least for us here in the southern part of Arizona, has been dry, real dry. I think we can say that, and warm. It's been above average, like you've said. So, we'll have to say, I think, you know, there's a couple things at play, larger things at play. Like we always talk about the El Nino Southern Oscillation, and during La Nina events, which we're in second year in a row, we tend to experience drier than average winters. And there's sort of a classic pattern of dry southern tier of the southwestern part of the U.S. and a wetter part of the Pacific Northwest. And mm-hmm. and that's largely held. Mm-hmm. So we're sort of following that La Nina-like pattern, and it's probably contributing to sort of diverting some of the storms that may have otherwise wafted into our region, diverted them a little bit further north. But
further north to like what's been going on in Seattle and up in British Columbia, where they're having once in 100-year flooding events, not just once, but they're having like three straight once in 100-year flooding events in BC.
Yeah, it's been quite remarkable. I should say that people have been talking about these rainfall events and the sort of word, which I think is really descriptive. It's not new, but it's kind of in our field. These atmospheric rivers.
Yep.
And they're actually quite common. In fact, and what they are, maybe I should describe them. What they are, they're these corridors of concentrated water vapor. So if you look at a column of air and you say, and you sum up all of the water vapor, say from the surface to 20, 30,000 feet, you get an idea of how much water is actually wafting in the air. And so there are these corridors 200 miles wide, mm-hmm. And that extend for, you know, hundreds of miles up to 1,000 miles across the Pacific Ocean. And they transport these large amounts of water vapor, and they're appropriately called atmospheric rivers. Mm-hmm. And when they get funneled into particular parts of our West Coast, because they go from west to east, they hit the topography. Mm-hmm. And then all of that air has to rise, mm-hmm. goes to colder air, mm-hmm. And all that moisture sort of falls out. So these are events that happen. In fact, they're global. At any one time, there's an atmospheric river going on. They're major features of our hydrologic cycle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in our West Coast, they usually produce, I think, 90% of the historical extreme precipitation and flooding events mm-hmm. are caused from these atmospheric rivers. So the driver of them is this extratropical cyclone that, sort of acts much like a severe storm or hurricane would in the tropics. It sort of acts like that and works to sort of funnel and help direct moisture air to the south into the West Coast.
And for any of our listeners who are planning a trip to Hawaii, say in the next couple of months, you've got a real treat in store for you. You don't have a real treat if you're going like today, because they're having what they call the Kona storms over there for the last 2 or 3 days. Historic rainfall on Oahu. But if you're going in a couple of months, you're going to have a real treat because it's going to be really, really green, which is good news because places like the island of Maui last year were so dry, they were having major wildfires on the island of Maui. So hopefully it's bad right now, but hopefully there will be a positive effect out of it.
Yeah.
Now, that wouldn't be an atmospheric river because it's in the trade wind and it's in the tropics. It's something they call a Kona effect. I don't really understand it, Zach, but it has something to do with coming off the big island, some kind of, again, a wind pattern. I guess maybe kind of like how our monsoon is very wind-driven.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Your listeners may be aware of aspects of the or descriptions of the atmospheric rivers that are called Pineapple Expresses.
Pineapple Express.
That's sort of a term I think is more common, and they sort of originate in sort of around the Hawaii Island, and it's that really moist tropical air that makes its way into the western U.S. and I should say also that there's a sort of seasonal cycle to these events where they tend to occur in the Pacific Northwest and sort of earlier in the winter, November, December, and then maybe toward the central part of California, Oregon, the San Francisco area, more sort of January. Mm-hmm. And then they can actually stream into Arizona, and those tend to happen in February. Now you can have an atmospheric river in any month, but just in terms of the temporal pattern, the pattern in time, there is this north to south progression.
Well, maybe we'll get a Pineapple Express, and if we do get one, I hope there won't be a lot of frigid air behind it. Maybe there won't be.
Well, that's also the thing about the Pineapple Express is because they're tapping the sort of tropical moisture, that air is usually warm. And so you also see, not only do you see a lot of rain because it's juicy tropical air, but warm temperatures. And if you have snowpack, this is when we get the rain on snow events. That the elevation, the snow line goes way up. And so they can also generate, if the conditions are right, like there is a lot of snowpack and you get these Pineapple Expresses, they can also generate quite a bit of flooding.
All right, Zach, it's time to talk about my favorite bakery. It's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle and its sister pastry, which I really like, or brother pastry. I like the Danish coffee cake. For your Thanksgiving, how did it go, Zach?
It was great. I got to hang out with my wife and my little boy.
And what about dessert?
Dessert? Well, I wish we had Mona's Bakery.
There you go.
That's a plug for Mona.
Did you do a pie at all?
You know,
or just
we're not much of a sweet pie person in our house. We had a low-key Thanksgiving this year.
All right, but if you were, Mona's would be your choice.
Absolutely. Mona's, I've heard great things.
Mona's Danish Bakery. People are hearing great things. Find out what all the excitement's about. We were up there on Sunday, and there was a steady stream of folks coming into Mona's, and a lot of them had heard about the Mona's right here on the show, which is great. For Steve and his team up there. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, they are preparing for Christmas. So put in your order now for a Christmas morning Danish Kringle or one of the Danish coffee cakes. And for your Christmas table, pumpkin pie, cherry. We did pumpkin and cherry on Thanksgiving for Mona's. Absolutely outstanding. Only using the finest ingredients and just a really great experience. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. More with Zach Guido right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. My friend, Dr. Zach Guido, our contributor on climate. He is from the University of Arizona. He's a climate scientist. And we're talking about, we've been talking about atmospheric rivers. Let's bring this now home to our winter season and how this La Nina winter might affect us. I mean, there is a report out there, and I won't give this guy particular credit because I don't know who he is, but he says he's got a weather blog, and he says that NOAA, the National Atmospheric Group, the National Weather Service, kind of ignores the Southwest.
Yeah, I think I saw that. I probably wouldn't use that word, ignore. NOAA, which is home to the National Weather Service, they also do the sort of, in their climate prediction center, they do the seasonal forecasts and a few other kinds of forecasts.
And the National Hurricane Center is in that.
Yep, it's in NOAA as well.
Yeah, okay.
Lost my train of thought.
Well, I was just saying, this particular individual is saying that maybe ignores isn't the right word, but just that generalizes about Arizona and New Mexico, that it's going to be dry.
Right.
It's a desert, so it's going to be warm and it's going to be dry.
Right. Well, the point I was going to make is that, you know, NOAA has to make these seasonal forecasts for a huge country.
Yeah.
And it's a tough job. I have a lot of respect for them. I think the point of this person is partially right. Like, there's some local nuances that make it difficult for sort of people that are from afar to understand what's actually going on. Largely, their predictions, at least in temperature, have been fairly good. Precipitation, it's a much harder thing to forecast at the seasonal level. El Nino and La Nina give us some really good tools to tilt our expectations. And like I said before, when we have a La Nina event, there's physical reasons why we think it's going to be drier. And basically what ends up happening is that the jet stream is further north. And so we don't get those storms that sort of waft in and bend down and come into the south as much as we do during other years.
Can you take a question from a listener, Zach, about the jet stream? And Tom put this up on the screen so I can read it. What role does the jet stream play in all of this? Does it have any effect on La Nina, El Nino formation? Have the seasonal movements and patterns of the jet changed over the years? And then how many jet streams are there? So there's about three questions in there, three
right.
or four questions. The role of the jet stream.
Right. So good question. It's not that the jet streams affect El Nino and La Nina. So it's the other way around. So this ENSO, El Nino Southern Oscillation phenomenon, is in the tropical Pacific Ocean. And basically there's an interaction between the sea surface temperatures and the atmosphere there that then affect, they sort of ripple outward and affect the weather patterns and the jet stream positions across the globe. And in some places, like in the Pacific Northwest and in our area, we can see an expression of that change in the rainfall and temperature patterns. In some places, you can't see any effect. That is to say that there is no difference during a La Nina event than during other times.
Has the jet changed much?
Well, so, you know, this is a big question, because the jet is really important. The jet stream is really important because where the sort of locus of our winds are, in large part, helps identify where, you know, storms pass. So, like in a La Nina event, as the jet stream is more to the north, we tend to be drier, and so the position of these winds is really important. And so it is an important question to look into in the context of how global climate is changing, how we're affecting our energy balance at the global scale. And there is every expectation that changes will happen. Because, you know, the whole climate system is set up to move energy around,
mm-hmm.
right? And so when you're changing the amount of energy around the world, you're going to change those patterns. It's a hard thing to piece out. One of the things that there's some evidence on is that the jet stream is moving further north earlier in mm-hmm. Earlier in the spring, so that we're getting less late winter precipitation.
All right, Zach, we also have a caller on the line. And while you're putting your headset on, nope, the caller, okay. The other portion of the question was, and this is an interesting one, how many jet streams are there? Now, I have, my guess would be, and then you can tell me what the real answer is, I'd say there's a jet stream for the Northern Hemisphere and there's a jet for the South.
Well, it's kind of a tricky question, because you can have different degrees of these jet streams, but the main ones are these westerly subtropical jet streams in both our poles, and then we also have the easterlies in the tropics. So I don't have a number. I think that would be a hard thing to count up for me at the moment. But the main ones are as the Earth is spinning, we basically have these westerly winds in the subtropical latitudes, and these easterly winds in the tropical latitudes. And then you get low-level jets. You get all these crazy dynamics that play out in part because of topography, but you can have low-level jets that go in different directions. You can have higher-level jets. And they manifest at different times during the year in different places. So it's a pretty complicated system.
Generally, does weather move from west to east? Like if you're flying, it's usually a shorter trip if you're going west to east, because you've got the jet behind you.
Right. So it.
And we've only got about a minute.
Okay. So across the globe, you actually have different orientations of the trade winds. So in the tropics, the trade winds are from the east, moving to the west.
I did not know that.
So, and then in the subtropics, like in our area, they're moving from west to east. And if you think about the monsoon, just to put it in our context, right? Like as that monsoon high moves north, it's basically the dividing line between the westerlies and easterlies, such that for part of the monsoon season, we're actually under easterly flow. So the prevailing winds change, and that's all a function of the fact that we live on a spherical planet that is spinning.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it right there. Zach, always a pleasure. I do appreciate your visits to the program so much, and we'll look forward to seeing you in 2022, get kind of a winter update from you. But in the meantime, you and your lovely family, I hope you all have a very wonderful holiday season and a safe season as well, Zach.
Well, same to you, Bill, and thanks. Look forward to coming back, and hopefully we've had some good
snowpack. Rain, yeah, I hope so. All right, we'll take our break right here. It's Buckmaster, our midweek edition. Councilman Paul Cunningham is up next on the Buckmaster Show right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. Midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. I'm just blown away by the fact that they grow 25,000 poinsettias at Green Things at 3384 East River Road. I don't know, probably several thousand are at least gone, maybe a whole lot more, because after all, Christmas is now about a little over two weeks away. So now would be a great time to do your holiday decorating with a stop at Green Things by the Rito River just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Pick up your poinsettias, then visit in the same place, 13-acre site, Zocalo and all that great merchandise, some beautiful handcrafted things for the holiday season from Mexico. So tour the five shops at Zocalo Village, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line and our monthly conversation with the Tucson City Councilman, the Democrat who represents the second ward in the city of Tucson. Here he is, Paul Cunningham. Paul, how are you today?
Great. Bill, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure always to be on your program.
Well, you sound great. I mean, we've got a really good landline for you today. First of all, do you like the decision of you and your colleagues to just not even bother with the national search for a new police chief now that Chief Magnus has moved on to bigger things in D.C.? Do you like the internal hire?
Well, I made the motion.
Oh, okay.
I support Chad 100%. This was kind of we planned this. You've got to do succession planning, and when the process started a year ago, it would have probably been then that we wanted to do a search, or did we have anything? And believe it or not, Chief Magnus had actually done some succession planning of his own.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, Kazmar had been his chief of staff. Kazmar is well liked through the ranks and by command and the fellow command staff. I mean, he is a Tucson guy. He understands 21st century policing as well as understanding all the other things that go in with policing. So he sees the big picture, and he definitely has earned his opportunity here. I mean, look, of course, I want to tell you, oh, he's going to go and become one of the greatest police chiefs we've ever had, and all that. But nobody can predict that. What I can tell you is he is very, very deserving of this opportunity, and was the most qualified person to become our next chief of police available, and that's why we chose him. And I completely stand behind it. We don't have to go without a commander. It's a seamless succession. And the other thing he did was, and this is the type of person that he is, we were really challenged in the 911 center. We were understaffed. We had antiquated equipment. We had procedures that were out of date. And he went in there and just turned that shop around after having morale problems and changes in leadership three or four times over the last 5 years. And he went in there and just did an incredible job. And that was outside of his capacity. He could have said, no, you know, I'd rather just stay deputy chief and such and so. And he took that challenge on because he knew Tucson needed him. And that, I think, speaks the most to why I made the motion last night to make him our next police chief.
Well, he certainly has a huge task. He's got a shortage of sworn officers. He's got these really two bad look incidents. I'll kind of refer that as you had an off-duty cop holding down a mother and a daughter with a knee to the neck. That was really widespread. That went all over the place on social media. Then there was the officer, the shooting a man in a motorized wheelchair. Two very, very bad looks for the department. So he's got his hands full, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's walking. You know, it's trial by fire here. It's two pretty big incidents. I mean, the second one is just absolutely tragic in that, you know, you've just got a situation that could have been managed a number of different ways based on what I've seen. I mean, you know, we weren't there, and we can't. We have to let the due process come through. But I can't. It's very disturbing. It's a really tough one to kind of accept. On the other one, I've got some questions about what happened after the fact. I think there'll be some, obviously, it's the same thing. It's still disturbing, and the officer holding down a 62-year-old woman. I have major problems with that, but my bigger concerns are what happened after that. And so we'll try to get to the bottom of those questions in the coming weeks.
And this issue with the whole police officer shortage, and that's got to be at the top of new Chief Kazmar's agenda, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the staffing shortage isn't symptomatic just to Tucson. It's a nationwide situation, and it's not just in policing. It's in fire. It's in operators for sanitation drivers. It is for 911 operators. It is for road repair workers here in TUSD and in other school districts. From what I understand, we don't have teachers coming to work. So there's an all encompassing labor shortage nationwide, and the places where you're always struggling for staffing are hit even worse. So that's again an issue that everyone's trying to battle and trying to keep forward. And you know, I think one of the things that's going to happen over the next few years is we're going to see a shift in how people work. I think it started already where people have like 3 or 4 gig jobs where they have 15, you know, they work 20 hours here, 20 hours there, 20 hours there, and that's the kind of their work week, or they have flexible, you know, because they want that work-life balance. And I think the biggest thing we're going to see is, you know, how are folks that are gig workers or that are 1099ers or are contract workers, how they pay their health insurance, how they set up their pensions and things like that. And that, those are the things that I think will kind of redefine what working and you know, that whole, the 40-hour work week with a pension and a health plan is kind of a 20th century thing. And I think the 21st century worker is going to be looking at different things. Well, I do this 15 hours a week and this 15 hours a week, and it's kind of my own thing, and I'm a one-person business. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's different. It's obviously not what I grew up on and what I was. You know, I'm in my 29th year in the workforce. Mm-hmm. I've had a job every day of my life since I was 17 years old.
Wow.
And so for me, in fact, a major majority, like 90% of that time I've had 2 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, what's interesting is that I'm used to that 20th century mentality, mm-hmm. you know, and now I think that's changing. I think there's a shift because with the internet and with apps that can pay you and crypto and all that other stuff, I think that whole notion of how we work, where we work, what we do, it's going to change. I don't know what it's going to change into exactly, but as long as there's value in what people are doing, they deserve to get paid for it. And it'll be interesting to see how that evolves long past our time here on Earth, Bill.
Yeah. I was thinking about my first job selling gladiolus flowers on a street corner as a kid. I can't say I've held a job every day since then, but that was a long time ago that I started into the workforce. But you're right, though. The whole workforce idea is changing. And I called a very well-known auto dealership here in town. I won't name the name. And they were right up front. They said, we can't get your car in for about 10 days. And the reason is we just don't have enough mechanics. So it is everywhere, Paul Cunningham, this labor shortage.
But that's the crazy thing. Bill, in 5 years, you won't go to the dealer. You'll have an app, and you'll be able to describe what's wrong with your car, and 7 mechanics will be able to bid on the job.
Yeah.
So it like I said, it's going to evolve. It's going to be kind of crazy. I can say this anecdotally, if you'll indulge me a bit.
Real quickly, because it's break time. Go ahead.
My first job was at Vince's Italian Food on Arcadia and Speedway as a dishwasher working the sprayer.
Mm.
I got that job right as basketball season ended my senior year of high school.
Mm. May I ask what year that was?
1992.
Okay. All right. All right, Paul Cunningham, stick around. We'll take our break right here. I've got a lot more on the plate for segment number four when we continue on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It looks like a little rain in the forecast for the next maybe tonight and then like 36 hours. But looking ahead to the weekend and early next week, the weather looks really, really nice. And I'm looking at the Silver City Grant County forecast. So this would be really maybe a trip over this weekend to Silver City would be a great idea, about a three-hour drive. So much to do. Take a sweater. No problem. Throw the sweater on or a light jacket and then do some hiking. Get out and enjoy this late autumn. I guess we can kind of call it early winter. weather here in the Southwest. This is the most beautiful time of year here in New Mexico and Arizona. So go to southwestnewmexico.org, start your planning for your trip to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's continue now with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham with us on the live line. Paul, yesterday, the Pima County Board of Supervisors, the vote was 3-2. To go ahead full speed with legal action against you and your colleagues on the city council over the differential water rates. Do you have any reaction to the suit?
Well, I'd like to see what the merits are before I make any like big comments on it. I don't think that I pretty much stand by where we're at. I think we're totally on legal ground. I don't know what their legal angle is. We went through painstaking processes to ensure that everything we were doing was legal and proper. Again, I'll more than remind people that we're talking about $4.88 a month in a situation that we did the cost of service study. And not only that, we're the only city that doesn't charge differential rates in the entire state of Arizona. So, I understand what they're – I suppose I understand what they're trying to do, but if they really want to pay lawyers to go to court when they may not have any legal merit, that's their business. I can't tell them how to do their jobs.
Did this all start with you, Paul?
What do you mean?
Well, the whole the whole differential water rate thing. Weren't you the one that brought it originally to the
county? Yeah, I've been an advocate of the differential water rates for a long time. I think it's really important. I also think it's wrong that the county provides municipal services, which is not really within the purview of what the state constitution is. I mean, there's so many different pieces to this, but basically what we've done is we've taken away local control from neighbors. We have this mishmash of different pockets of the county acting as another city when every other county has towns and cities that have been formed in different areas where they should be. And those are the ones that should be providing municipal services. A county area is a rural area with farms and open space and lots of land. You can't put a subdivision into an unincorporated area and expect them to have municipal services. They're supposed to be part of a town. That's how they did it in Maricopa County. Not only is the state constitution designed like that, the laws are set up that way, and the taxing laws, the state shared revenue laws, are set up that way to the point that we are penalized to the tune of $80 to $100 million a year in the region that we do not get because we have a higher percentage of our population living in an unincorporated area. The other piece is I want people to understand is that there is value in having rural areas, and there is value in having less dense areas around an urban area and even suburban areas. So if we can once these rates are established, we can also go into exemptions, well credits, other things, so people can get relief so they don't get hit with sticker shock. But we made it a very minimal amount. And the idea was to start the conversation on what the city's allowed to do in order to capture revenues. Most of these revenues are probably going to go going back into countywide projects, both customers both in the city and outside of the city, and more importantly, they'll be going to projects to conserve water. Finally, as I've stated before many times, in this situation, when the utility goes out to back bond to issue debt, when the utility does anything tied, they're tied to the city. They're tied to the city taxpayers, and we have a multiple faceted cost of service study illustrating that demonstrates a cost differential between 9% and 26%, and we're having about a 5%. We're having a small 5% increase. The other thing is that county residents don't pay the $1.12 a month conservation fee. So the net difference will be $4.88 a month for 90% of the customers.
All right. I want to switch gears here. I was talking about Silver City, and I was generally talking about our part of the world, Southwest New Mexico, Southern Arizona. And, you know, it is a great time to visit here. And this is the beginning, Paul, as you know, of kind of the primetime season. Looking ahead, what are you hearing about our annual Gem Show?
Well, I know the Gem Show's on this year, or has been on. Whether or not the Omicron variant and the Delta variant and the higher numbers for COVID will affect the Gem Show is another question. I feel like throughout the country, there's a contingent of people who have accepted the idea that we're going to be living with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is whether or not to get busy living or not, and having confidence in the vaccines and the boosters and all that, or not having confidence in that. And it's anybody's choice. People have the choice. I think that for me, on just kind of how I feel about it, is that if we're able to get vaccines that are safe and maybe even updated so that we know that they are effective against whatever variants come our way. And I do understand that preliminarily the mRNA vaccines seem to be effective against this Omicron, and we're effective against Delta, at least from keeping people from getting too sick. If we're able to get to a certain point, and that includes kids, all vaccinated at the same time in the same year, and then do a quarantine or do a 12-day, 15-day quarantine, and go back to where we were in March of 2020. If we were able to do all that worldwide, then we may not ever have to live under the nose of this. But that's a very strong and coordinated effort that would have to happen, and I'm not sure that every single country and every single place in the world could pull that off.
Yeah, Paul, I hate to interrupt you, but I've got a caller. Can we do this question real fast, Paul? You'll have a very short answer. Caller
sure.
wanted to know why Paul thinks it's fair for the city to charge differential water rates while Pima County does not charge differential rates for sewer service it provides to the city. You'll have 30 seconds to answer it.
Okay, that's fairly easy. The county government runs the sewage system, and they service the entire county. We service both people in the city limits and service people outside the city limits that we're not obligated to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, we're comparing apples and oranges there.
All right, Paul, I'm going to let you go, and I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season. We'll look forward to talking to you in 2022. And give your father specifically my regards this holiday season, will you?
Absolutely, Bill. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman, with us on the Buckmaster Show. And that's going to do it. It's Wednesday. That means I'm off to physical therapy. That ought to be fun. Always a fun 40 minutes on the table. But anyway, be back with you tomorrow in about 23 hours on the Buckmaster Show. Have a great day, everybody.